Warning. This episode contains sexual situations, adult language, and astrology. Listener discretion is advised. Crimson Swan Studios presents Lilith's Love by Dan Charette. Read by the author. And featuring the voice talents of
Michelle Sully,
Danny Cutler,
Bob Gallagher,
Jack Hosley,
Carl Long,
Jack Mangan.
Blue Moon, you saw me standing alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Lauren's Heart, Blue Moon. Chapter 10. Starting his search at the college library, Donovan ended up at the main branch of the public library downtown. He found countless books on the Salem witch trials, all of them covering a wide range of topics and viewpoints. He even found one particularly old book, which only survived to this day by going through many editions, which listed and detailed some of the more notorious trials. However, as Lilith claimed, the Dubois case was not to be found. What he did discover was something very special about the date in question, astronomically speaking. July 31st, 1693, featured a full moon. Lilith had said that the first Thursday of July was a full moon as well. Donovan confirmed that on that Thursday, July 2nd, there was indeed a full moon. This meant that the full moon on the 31st was a blue moon. Don also came to find out that a blue moon occurs about every 3 years, making it a rare occurrence. This blue moon was very rare because August of 1693 also contained a blue moon. Two blue moons in the same year, in adjacent months, there was definitely something special about the summer of 1693. Don was not one to make a big leap of faith, but recent events in his life had changed his worldview considerably. He decided that this event must have played a role in being reincarnated and given a wonderful second chance at life. This was news that he couldn't wait to share with Lilith. At Anna's request, Chris looked through his scrapbooks to find a picture of Mary Jane. Lilith was going to ask her friends at the bar about her, and she told Anna and Chris that a photograph would be very helpful. Even though it was a simple task, he had a difficult time, emotionally, going through the pictures. He finally found one, a studio photo, his favorite, and gave it to Anna later in the day.
"Do you know where Don is?"
he asked Anna, wondering if Lilith confided anything to her.
"Lilith said that he went to the library to do some research. On his past, I guess. Apparently, he healed very quickly, and that led them to have the conversation."
A small pang of guilt hit Anna because she wasn't telling Chris everything Lilith told her. She tried to save any expression she might have let slip by saying,
"He's recovered well, and everything will be okay."
That statement made Chris uncomfortable, but he decided to let it slide.
"I hope so,"
he said solemnly. He handed the picture he found to Anna and said,
"Here's the best picture of Mary Jane I could find. I hope Lilith can find out what's going on."
His watch beeped. His 6:30 p.m. alarm was going off.
"Shit, I forgot today was Sunday. I gotta get to work."
He kissed her quickly and ran off to change his clothes and prepare for work. Anna thought aloud to herself,
"This is great. How the hell am I supposed to tell him that his best friend may become a vampire? I'll get you for this one, Lilith."
As the sun went down, Lilith woke up to find herself in her own bed. Groggily walking around, she found a note from Anna and the picture of Mary Jane. The note read,
"I don't like being the one to have to tell Chris about what's going on between you and Don. He needs to know, but either you or Don should tell him. I'll back you up, but I just can't tell him. Anyways, here's the picture you wanted. Bring us back good news, please."
Lilith knew Anna wouldn't want the task of telling Chris, but this morning she was weak from sharing blood with Dawn and didn't want to do anything but crash in her own bed with her mattress of earth. Now she realized that she or Dawn, probably both, would need to tell Chris about how far their relationship had gone. No matter who would tell him, Lilith knew it wouldn't be easy news to handle. In the meantime, she had more pressing matters to tend to. She made herself presentable to the world and put the photograph in her purse. As she left the house, she noticed that Anna's van was parked in the carport. She decided against driving the van lest Anna should need it, so she took to the sky and made her way to Michael's bar.
Hey, good looking. Nice to see you again.
Hey yourself, Jake. Is Michael around?
He's in his office right now, taking care of some business. Something maybe I can help you with?
He picked up a glass and started to mix her a Bloody Mary. She stopped him and said,
No thanks on the drink, but speaking of Bloody Marys, there's something you might be able to help me with.
Anything, sugar.
She took the photo out of her purse and showed it to Jake.
Does this vamp look familiar to you?
Jake gulped when he saw the picture, and Lilith noticed.
Where is she, Jake? Don't do this to me. This bitch attacked my friends and me last night. I need to find her before her master comes after us.
Jake's face did the impossible by turning even whiter than it already was when she said master. Lilith noticed that too.
Jake, you've got to help me. Is this guy bad news?
Girl, you don't know the half of it. I want to help, but you gotta promise me something.
Anything, Jake. Anything.
You gotta watch your back and mine if I tell you.
Tell me what, Jake?
That Mary Jane's closer than you think.
That stopped Lilith in her tracks. She sniffed the air, and besides taking in the cigarette smoke and the smell of fear coming from Jake, she also smelled two other vampires. One of them female.
You don't mean...
Jake stopped for a moment, looking around nervously, paranoia getting a good hold on him. He then whispered to Lilith,
She's the business that Mike's taking care of.
As Lilith shouted a random expletive and ran towards Michael's office, Jake called to her,
Watch your back and remember, you didn't hear it from me.
When she got to Michael's door, she found it locked. She didn't want to break the door in because the customers in the bar might get nosy, so she shifted to mist and snuck through the space under the door. When she rematerialized, she saw what she hoped she wouldn't find. Michael and Mary Jane were making out on his office desk. Amazingly, neither one noticed Lilith's arrival, so she took a closer look. They were still fully clothed, but they both sported bloody necks and faces. As Lilith looked closer, she realized that Mary Jane was doing most of the drinking, and Michael looked pretty out of it. Lilith growled at Mary Jane, and the blonde vampire finally looked up. She had a wide smile made wider by the red blood smeared around her lips. Mary Jane hissed and leapt off of Michael over to Lilith, knocking her down. She sat on top of Lilith now and pinned her down. Mary Jane swiftly bit into Lilith's neck and began to drink from her. Lilith couldn't help but give in to the ecstasy of her attacker's kiss. In seconds, she was too weak to move or care either way. Mary Jane was satiated on her blood and collapsed on top of Lilith. Lilith's eyes opened to see why Mary Jane had stopped, and she discovered the bloated creature on top of her. Lilith needed blood now, and if she could only sober up from the pleasure, then she had a supply just waiting for her. Mary Jane opened her eyes and saw Lilith, then smiled that wide grin again and kissed her. That was a mistake, but Mary Jane was too drunk from the blood to realize it. Lilith tasted the blood on Mary Jane's lips, and it burned inside her. It seemed energizer enough for her to find her arms and legs again. She flipped Mary Jane over, and Lilith bent over her neck and drank deep from the hunter, now turned hunted. Now Mary Jane cried out from the pleasure and wrapped her legs around Lilith's torso and pulled her down on top. Lilith enjoyed herself as well, but she was more concerned with replacing her blood supply. When she was more than satisfied, She pried herself loose from Mary Jane's grip. She stood up and walked over to Michael. His eyes had rolled back, and he was out cold. Lilith deduced that some blood would bring him around. She took a handkerchief from her purse and wiped her face and neck. She then wrung the cloth over his mouth, letting him taste of her blood. His eyes immediately opened, and he grabbed Lilith's wrist and bit into it, taking her by surprise. Weakened by Mary Jane, Michael was in a frenzy, feeding from Lilith. Lilith allowed Michael to drink, but only enough to get him snapped back to normality. She pulled herself away and applied the kerchief to her wrist. Michael looked around the room, trying to get his bearings. When his eyes focused on Lilith, he mumbled,
What happened?
That's what I'd like to know. Do you have a bathroom near?
Michael raised a heavy arm behind him to the door she came in from and said,
Surround the corner.
She unlocked and opened the door, then went back to Michael and walked him slowly outside his office and around the corner to the bathroom. She turned on the light and sat Michael down on the toilet. She plugged the sink drain and ran some cold water into the basin, filling it halfway. She then helped Michael up again, walked him over to the sink, and splashed the water in his face. This did not go over well with him, but at least his griping was proof that he was coming out of it.
You look terrible,
was the first thing he said when he stopped whining. She replied in kind.
Yeah, but you look worse. Cast reflection and see for yourself.
He looked at the mirror that they were both standing in front of and only saw her reflection. He closed his eyes and focused, and even grunted a little. Eventually, he saw himself and how right she was. He took a hold of the sink and tried to stand on his own. When she saw that he was okay, she released him and walked over to grab some paper towels. She started wiping his face, but he stopped her and took over for her. She then took some towels for herself and cleaned up. When she was finished, she realized that she'd left Mary Jane in his office, so she said,
I'll be right back.
Then she ran out of the room before he could acknowledge her. She dashed into his office, but she was too late. Mary Jane was gone. How, when, and where to, she had no answers for. Unfortunately, she did know why.
She's gone to tell her master that I found her. Shit!
Lilith was about to head back to the bathroom, but Michael saved her the trip. He asked her,
Where'd she go?
She closed his office door as he sat down in his chair, and she replied,
That's a good question, but I've got a better one. What the hell was she doing here in the first place?
She didn't mean to yell at him, but she couldn't stop herself. She calmed down and apologized.
I'm sorry.
Don't be. You have every right to be pissed. But I promise you, I'm in the same boat as you now. That blonde bombshell turned out to be more like a time bomb.
Lilith sat in a chair across from him and asked,
So what can you tell me?
Just curious, but why do you think I'd hide anything?
Because Jake wasn't exactly forthcoming with info. I thought you might start slow, too.
So that's how you knew she was in here. I can understand your caution, but Jake was only doing what she asked. We both were.
For such a young vamp, she sure seems to get what she wants.
That's because she's a looker, and she knows it. She uses that to her advantage, not unlike some other people I know. You're not jealous, are you, Lilith?
He wore a smug grin. Lilith didn't appreciate that, so she responded sharply.
She and I may be alike in how we get what we want, but one thing makes us very different.
And what's that?
I don't try to kill someone once I get what I want.
True enough, and for that I thank you. That is also why I'm going to tell you what you want to know, or at least, all that I know.
Her sarcastic grin relaxed and became an honest, appreciative smile. She leaned back into her seat and listened to what he had to say.
She came to the bar a few nights before you hit town. She said she was new to town, from California. She wanted to start a new life here, and she told me she was alone. I was very attracted to her, and she let me know that she'd do anything to make a new life here. That night we shared each other, and she was incredible. I thought I'd come close to falling in love again, but she really had me wrapped around her little finger. I would have done almost anything for her, and the first thing I did was introduce her to Malcolm. Immediately, Malcolm sensed something amiss about Mary Jane and denied her permission to stay. I told him my feelings for her, and he point-blank told me that she was using me. I should have believed him, but at the time I was blind. My eyes were open, however, when she made passes at Malcolm, and amazingly he fell for it. She promised him the very pleasure she'd given me if she could start a new life here. It was then that I realized she had used me to get to him. She seduced him right before my eyes, not giving a damn that I was there. He gave her permission to stay. She then submitted to his bite, and he satiated himself on her till he was drunk off his ass with her blood. Then she started laughing. I realized then that she was one scheming little bitch. However, she wasn't acting alone. Another laugh, deeper, more menacing, joined hers. I turned around to take off, find help, do something besides standing there like a fool. But he was behind me, her master. He grabbed me by my neck and drank from me till I stopped kicking and fighting him. Then he threw me against the wall and I was knocked out cold. I woke up back at the bar and I had forgotten everything that had happened that night. After you came to town and settled in, I remembered it all. Somehow after meeting you and making sure you were all right, I remembered her master. And then her. I told Jake about what happened, and he was worried that you were involved. We decided to get some answers from her, so we asked her to come down here. She obliged, saying that she had to tell me something about you. She agreed to come down today, but that you must not find out. When she got here, she apologized for what happened, saying that she did what she had to do to stay here, but she still wanted to see me. She's good. Real good. I was hot for her all over again, and she wanted to do it right here on my desk. She told me to lock the door for privacy, and the fool I am, I did it. She let me take from her first, and after I was sated on her blood, I felt weak. She told me she wanted to thank me for getting her, and you, into the valley. She said her master has plans for you. She then showed me her appreciation by drinking from me, only too much. I couldn't move. I couldn't make a sound. What's worse, I didn't care, because it felt so damn good. If it hadn't been for you coming in when you did, she would have sucked me dry.
Lilith didn't know whether to feel sorry for him or finish what Mary Jane had started.
So all of this happened because she's a good fuck?
I deserve that. But you gotta believe me, I didn't know. Damn it, I'm sorry if all hell has broken loose because of me. But I've just gotta know. What the hell did you do to her?
I didn't even know her until last night, and even then I only defended myself and my friends. Now she says her master's gonna cream us. This is one vindictive little bitch.
Just then, Malcolm walked into the office and said,
Or she has one vindictive, deviously brilliant master.
Lilith was impressed with the stealth Malcolm had maintained when he entered the room, and her expression showed it. In the light of Michael's office, Malcolm looked slightly different than he did at Papago Park. She noticed that his hair wasn't blonde, it was white. He still looked quite young, perhaps killed as a teen, so she gathered he was perhaps an albino. He was exquisitely handsome, as someone trapped in their youth might hope to be. But he no longer appeared European, let alone German. No, he looked almost Latino or Native American, perhaps. But his skin tone was very pale, not tan. He was more of a mystery now to her than before.
I didn't mean to star you both. I meant only to provide any answers to questions that the lady would ask of me.
Lilith was certainly left speechless, but she acknowledged the apology. Michael seemed to settle back into his chair and calmly asked,
What brings you here, my lord?
Malcolm motioned to Lilith, as if to ask her permission to sit in the chair next to her. She smiled and nodded. As Malcolm sat down next to Lilith, he took her left hand in his right and gently kissed it.
A pleasure to see you again, Lilith.
The pleasure and honor are mine, sir.
As she faced towards the voivode, she glanced in Michael's direction, as if to remind him that Michael had asked him a good question.
Ah, yes. Jake summoned me and told me that Lilith had come here looking for the blonde vampire.
Malcolm eventually turned to face Michael to get a response.
Well, she found her. Lilith saved me from her as well, though she did get away.
She'll be back.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
So I'm sure you'd like to know how I got mixed up in all of this.
If there's anything you can tell me.
Not much more than what I'm sure Michael has already told you, I'm afraid. What's worse is, what I do have to tell you, I know you don't want to hear.
Malcolm sat back and watched her carefully.
I'm sure that I don't want to, but I must know. My life, or at least what passes for it, is at risk, as well as those of my friends.
I hope Michael, Jake, and I are on the list of friends in danger. We face the same wrath as you for telling you about the danger you face. Though once you hear what I have to tell you, you may feel like crossing me off that list.
Never. I owe my acceptance here in town to you.
That is precisely what I need to tell you. The master told me to let you in.
With that, he turned away, ashamed.
The master? Not Mary Jane's master?
She asked, knowing the answer already.
Yes. He holds no sway over my mind. She holds no sway over my heart.
Confused, and starting to get upset, she asked.
Then why?
Because he is powerful. I myself am more than 500 years old. The master must be centuries older by the depth of his power. He could easily have destroyed me and my dominion here. Now I fear that he plans to do so anyway, planned to all along.
The master. The master! Why do you keep calling him that if he truly holds no claim to your will?
She asked, doing her best to keep her voice respectfully low.
Because he has no name. He demands that he be called master. It is out of fear, not respect, that I call him that.
She stopped for a moment, reflecting on all that she had heard and experienced that day and the night before.
Can you just tell me one thing?
Of course, you need only to ask.
If none of this had happened, and I had just shown up here, would you still have given me permission to stay here?
Oh, certainly, Lilith. I regret the circumstances, not the decision.
Then I'll be damned if I'm gonna let some blonde bitch and her ancient master start some shit in my hometown. Will you help me fight back?
My dear, you've got more guts than the three of us together. But if I've learned anything in all of my centuries, teamwork and cooperation can beat all odds. I'm with you.
What about you, Michael?
I think you're crazy, but I owe you. You can count on me. And I know that Jake will volunteer his aid as well.
Michael hoped he knew what he was getting into.
Thank you, gentlemen. I think we should start by finding out anything, and I mean anything else we can about these two.
She thought it felt good to have their support again.
We'll do what we can, but something tells me that they'll find us first.
Damn it, I was hoping you wouldn't say that.
Don got back home from the library a little after 8 p.m. As he pulled into the driveway, he noticed that Chris's car was missing and Anna's van was parked in her carport. Don concluded that they had gone off somewhere in Chris's car. As Don parked in his garage and closed its door, he noticed that Anna and Lilith's house lights were still on.
Great. Lily's home. I can tell her what I found out,
he thought to himself. He carried the books and notes over to their door and knocked. He was surprised when Anna opened the door.
Hi, Don. Just got home from the library?
Yeah. Is Lilith here?
Nope, she went down to Michael's bar to find out what she could about Mary Jane. She said she'd be home by now, so come on in.
Don accepted the offer. He set his stuff on the kitchen table as Anna closed the door behind him. Anna browsed through the titles of the books and politely asked,
Salem Witch Trials? What horrible stories.
She told you, didn't she?
Anna looked suddenly uncomfortable and asked,
Told me? Told me what?
That we finally talked about who and what she is, and who I am, or was.
Yeah, I think she might have mentioned that.
And did she also mention that we...
shared each other's blood, and that if you die you'll become a vampire like her?
Anna nervously finished his question. She tried to pull herself together, then said,
Yeah, she told me that too. What about Chris?
What about Chris? Oh, I suppose I should be the one to tell him. Especially seeing as how it makes you so uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable? Me? No. God knows I've been around Lilith long enough to see this coming. I guess I just never thought it would happen.
What? You're a witch whose best friend is a vampire. One would have thought you'd seen everything.
I hate that word. I am not a witch. I'm an herbalist mystic of the Wiccan faith, and frankly, I thought I'd seen everything too.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that you didn't like the label.
That's what it is, a label, with negative connotations. Some people I know try to cover it by calling themselves white witches or nature witches, but if you ask me, it's a tainted reference to a bloody history.
A history that I know a lot more about now. A history that I was a part of.
Now, I'm sorry. I forgot. How could I forget that?
It's okay, really. Let me ask you a question to kind of take us on a small tangent.
Sure.
What is involved in the hand fasting ceremony?
Well, what do you want to know?
When do they normally occur?
Traditionally, they are held at night, while the moon is waxing. Most get scheduled on the night of a full moon. The ones that occurred on the night of a honeymoon were particularly blessed, hence the modern tradition of taking a honeymoon after a wedding, when weddings couldn't be held on a night of an actual honeymoon.
I know what a blue moon is now, but what's a honeymoon?
It's when the moon is large in the horizon and is a deep amber color. You might also know it as a harvest moon.
Oh, okay. What about the vows? Or are there any?
Sure, there are. Though, unlike other religions' weddings, the couple doesn't vow to be wed until death do us part. I've known some who vowed to be wed for a year and a day, and other spans of time. But traditionally, most wed for as long as love lasts. People change, feelings change. We believe that the exit should be provided.
Dawn's eyes lit up, and the last piece of the puzzle seemed to fit into place.
Then what would happen if the couple never fell out of love? What if, at death, they parted, but the love remained? What if the fates, or gods, or stars, or moon, or whatever were positioned right?
Right for what? For bringing you two back together? What about Lilith?
Well, she died, but has unnaturally had her life extended. To correct the wrong, I was given a second chance at life.
Maybe, but you mentioned the moon. Why the moon?
A blue moon. Two, in fact. In July and August of 1693, there were two blue moons.
That's impossible. A blue moon occurs about every 3 years.
Ah, that's just it. It's not impossible, just very, very unlikely. And it happened.
Don ruffled through his notes, which included a photocopy of an old almanac page listing the lunar cycle for 1693. He pointed to July and said,
"There was a full moon on July 2nd, and one here on August 30th. The amazing thing is that there was another full moon near midnight between July 31st and August 1st.
Slowly understanding the logic, Anna said,
"So the moon, while technically full on either July 31st or August 1st, shined bright as a full moon both nights."
"Making it a blue moon on July 31st, and making the August 30th another consecutive blue moon."
"That is incredible. You may be right. Gods, you may be right. I guess I haven't seen everything. Well then, you really do have something to tell Lilith and Chris."
"That reminds me, where is Chris?"
"He went to work at 6:30 this evening."
"What? This is Sunday. He doesn't work on Sundays."
"Maybe they called him in to cover for someone."
Don gathered up his stuff and said,
"I highly doubt that."
"Why is that? What's wrong?"
"The store's closed on Sundays," he said as he ran out the door, headed to his own home.
You've been listening to episode 11 of Lilith's Love, written and performed by Dan Charette, featuring the music of The Narrow Way, used with permission. Starring Michelle Selly as Lilith Thompson, Danny Cutler as Anna Foster, Robert Gallagher as Malcolm, Jack Hosley as Jake, Carl Long as Christian Armstrong, and Jack Mangan as Michael Barrett. Sound effects courtesy of the Free Sound Project, which can be found at www.freesound.org. This audio recording is copyright 2009 and 2010 by Dan Charette, and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.5 license. You are encouraged to share this audio file, just don't sell it, don't change it, and let folks know where they can hear more. The novel, Lilith's Love, is copyright 1994 by Dan Charette, and can be found at Amazon.com or ordered at fine bookstores everywhere. This is a work of fiction. All names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's peculiar imagination or are used fictitiously. Any resemblance to any actual persons, living, dead, or undead, events or locales is entirely coincidental. To find out more about the novel, please visit www.liliths-love.com or the author's homepage at www.danshuret.com. That's DanShurette.com.